Oh, that's me gagging. I don't usually talk like that at the top of the show. Anyway, here we go. Welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race Recap Show for All Stars Season 4, Episode 8, titled RuPaul's Best Judy's Race. My name is Joe Batance, and I am joined, as always, by one amazing co-host. From New York City and the lifestyle blog, Hi, H-I-G-H, howareyou.com,
please say the wrong thing, and please act like a fool.
To Jamila Zara. Hello, Jamila.
People are mad. People are mad.
Yeah, tell me about it. No one's known more in the past 12 hours how angry people are about Manila Luzon going. How, you know, we're going to get right into it pretty soon, Jamila, but how are you doing? How's the weather in New York? This is what a weird question, but it's raining here. So
oh my gosh, it is better considering that Wednesday was -6 degrees.
I've never been in
the 30s and we're like, oh, let me put my shorts on. It just feels so much better.
I don't think I've ever been in weather under 30 ever in my life.
Oh my God.
When I
then
leave California,
do not come to New York in January.
I've never left California in the winter. I'm always in California in the winter. Because why would I leave? Why would I go somewhere else colder?
Because you're smart.
Yeah. So anyway, for those of you listening, let me explain a little bit what's going on. I thought there was no better week than to give you a taste of what you're missing on Patreon than this week, and what a week to do it, to bring in Jamila Zara, who's my co-host on our show Reclaiming Our Time over on Patreon. And what Reclaiming Our Time is, I describe it as a diverse perspective on RuPaul's Drag Race. It's kind of like the recap show that you know, but this time, because, you know, every other podcast, except with the exception of What the Tuck with Nicole Byer, every other RuPaul's Drag Race recap podcast is white gay people and their girlfriends and their white girlfriends talking about RuPaul's Drag Race. So I was like, you know, there needs to be a show where people of color have a place, because they, you know, they're African-Americans who love the show. Jamila's African-American, by the way. There are straight people who like the show. There are Asian people who like the show. There are Latino people who like the show. And so that's what Reclaiming Our Time is. And Jamila co-hosted with me over on Patreon. And
there are also there are so many Black girls on this season.
Yeah, exactly.
So many. And I love it.
They're getting rid of all the non-Black girls one by one. It's the Black Heathers. So anyway, Jamila, you know, let's talk a little bit about Jamila. Jamila, I knew her. She used to be the producer on Larry Flick's show over on Sirius XM Radio. Now you run this lifestyle blog, HiHowAreYou.com. Tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so yes, HiHowAreYou.com is a lifestyle blog. It's mainly targeted towards women, but it's really targeted towards anyone who enjoys a little bit of cannabis now and then. And so hence the name, Hi, How Are You? But I just noticed that when I was reading women's publications, you hear a lot about beauty and fashion and celebrity gossip, but there's just not somebody who is not really for somebody who enjoys other things like smoking and politics and humor. And so when I started HiHowAreYou.com, I was thinking, like, what would Rihanna want to read? What would Frances Bean Cobain want to read? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's mainly who I wrote it for. I wrote it because I was missing the content that I wanted to see. So I figure, why not write it myself?
Yeah.
And I think that's what everyone should do. I think that if you feel like you are missing something, I think you should create it yourself.
Hey, look, yeah, look, this is how this show came about. This is how Reclaiming Our Time came about. This is, you have to, it's one of the things I've learned. And you know what? I think, and I mean, this is going to start a whole other conversation, that I think people of color, particularly in show business, they're just going to, you have to go and do it yourself. No one's going to come and find you and say, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know what's so funny, though? And I love, we actually did a full YouTube show. Oh, by the way, everyone listening, we have a YouTube channel. On Friday nights, we're going to be doing live YouTube recaps of the episode at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, right after the East Coast premiere. And the YouTube page is at youtube.com/C, /Drag Race Recap. And you can go there, subscribe. You'll get a notification when we go live. And it's Friday nights right after the episode airs. But last night I did the show with this guy, Jake Dupree. Okay. And he's a very nice person. Very, very kind. Very, very smart. Very, very funny. I like him very much. But he's like this blonde, white, Twinkie guy. Right. And he was in the Kitty Girl video last year. And whenever I talk to him, it's so white privilege that it's so fun. Like recently he was in a drag competition and I said, "Oh, how did it go?" He goes, "I won." And I was like, "Oh, good for you." And then he goes, and then
Dina was that won. His first time competing?
Yeah. Yeah. First time competing, he won $10,000 or something. And then he goes, then I just started like doing, like I'm not going to do drag. I'm going to do boylesque. And then he started doing boylesque and Dina Von Teese put me in her show and people just call me and offer me work all the time. And I was like, oh, this guy does not understand how it's a, you know, I one time, you know, I, there was a time, I still am, I guess, a writer. And I was talking to a friend of mine. She's a Latina producer, right? And she was producing a show about, at the time, about a Latino guy, a comedian, taking his life story and turning it into a sitcom. And she's like, yeah, I said, how's that going? She goes, it's fine, but gosh, I can't find any funny Latino writers. And I'm like, I'm sitting right across. She's talking to me saying she can't find funny Latino writers. And so like, you just have to bang doors down. You have to really make your own show, your own name. And then people have to come, you know, I'm not even a big George Lopez fan, but do you know how George Lopez got famous? It's one of my favorite stories.
No,
he couldn't. Mm-mm. He couldn't get booked in comedy clubs. So you know what he used to do? It's so smart. He would go to like a very Spanish speaking city. He would buy out the theater because he had a little bit of money from doing stand up, right? But he wasn't going anywhere. He would buy out the theater. Just like, how much does it cost to rent it out? And I got $10,000. Okay. Then he would book himself on all these Spanish language radio shows and be really funny and talk about this show he was doing. And then he would sell the tickets for whatever ticket price was and keep all the money. And he would make like 40, 50 grand a show because he paid for the theater himself. The theater wasn't making any cut of it. And so he was crushing it before he was even famous. And that's when Sandra Bullock kind of found him. But yeah, he was making a lot of money because he had to go do it himself. I know I just marched all over you, but you excited me with saying like, yes, us people of color have to do that.
Well, I have a story about shameless self-promotion.
Okay, go ahead.
Last week, I went to a cannabis conference, and one of the little classes that they had, everybody had like breakout sessions. One of the sessions that they had was cannabis and media. Mm-hmm. And so this guy was like putting on, he had a projector, and he was putting all these cannabis sites on the projector. He put up Mary Jane, mm-hmm. he put up High Times, all these sites. And then one of the people asked, well, like, how can we get ourselves published in a cannabis site? And so he went through this whole thing about how to get published. And then I raised my hand and I said, well, you know, I'm also a cannabis publication and I'm hiring writers. Yeah. And then he was like, what's the name of your site? And then put it up on the fucking projector.
Oh.
In front of everybody. And I'm like, and you could see people with their phones, like taking a picture so they can remember the site. And I was like, yeah, take a picture. Take a picture, it lasts longer.
No, but that's what you have to do.
It feels weird to promote yourself like that and to try and sell yourself, but just be Naomi Smalls about it.
Yeah.
Be unapologetic.
Yeah, you just have to do it. It's funny because it's just something I've learned. You just have to. A friend of mine told me once, I think there's a really, she told me this in college, but she's super successful and it makes sense. She said, you have to tell people how awesome you are, and then your job is to prove that you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's exactly it. You have to just constantly tell people how rad you are, because then they'll believe it. They'll just believe whatever you tell them. Well, you know what? With that, Jimmy, let's jump right into the show. This week, the girls mourn Valentina. RuPaul teaches the girls about Judy Garland. The girls make over their best Judys. RuPaul cries. Latrice cries. Manila's boyfriend cries. And Monet makes her best friend cry when she shaves her eyebrows. The girls perform in a Judy Garland number, I guess, and then walk the runway with their friends in their best Judy couture. In the end, Latrice Royale and Manila Luzon were placed in the bottom two, while Monet Exchange and Naomi Smalls were placed in the top two. After Monet and Naomi lip-synced against each other in a lip-sync for their legacies, or actually hurting their legacies now, Naomi was named the winner of the challenge, forcing her to pick one of the two most legendary queens of all time to go home. In the end, Naomi pulled Malia Luzon's lipstick and caused quite the gag in the world of RuPaul's Drag Race. Jamila, can you do me a favor? And I know this is new for you. I can go first if you want. But name two things you liked about the episode and one thing you did not.
Okay. Two things that I liked about the episode. Naomi's green look was stunning. Mm-hmm. I loved Monet Exchange's best friend, Patty.
Okay.
Like, ended up looking sickening after the makeover.
Yeah.
One thing that I didn't like was I felt like the tribute to Judy was just a random way that you could get everybody to say my best Judy. Like, Judy Garland just seemed like a random, just like insert in this whole episode, which is sad because I feel like she deserves more.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, they wrote that, so you may not know this, but there used to be a guy named Lucian Piani who was on the show, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy who wrote all of RuPaul's music, and he used to
Remember he had the breakdown,
yes.
And, I remember Lucian.
During the election, he had a crazy breakdown. Who knows? It may be drug-related, maybe not, but I hear he's getting better. Actually, Larry, our friend Larry Flick, talks to him, and I guess he said he's getting better and recovering, but, he burned all his bridges. But as corny as his songs were, they were better than what they've been putting out. Like, they're really, really bad. Oh, my God. This song was dreadful. It was dreadful. And all they did was just ring in Judy Garland songs' names. And it was awful. And you're right.
And the fact that they were all wearing the same thing, it wasn't like you can choose your own Judy Garland era. It was like, it really was. They wanted to have my best Judy episode. And they were like, well, I guess we'll put it around Judy Garland.
Yeah.
Rather than just being like, this is something that a lot of queer people say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, my good Judy. Like, you know, like, rather than just saying that and leaving it at like that, they just were like, well, let's surround it around Judy Garland. But it just seemed weird. It seemed very, very weird.
It was very, very strange. Or, you know what? Do that challenge when you don't have them. Yeah, but you're right. They have this thing where they want to do the best Judy thing. I don't know. Because then you had all these people who aren't drag queens now trying to dance and sing like a Judy Garland.
Yes. Which is like normally when they do the best friend makeover challenge, it's just runway.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they have to worry about. But now you have these people who aren't performers having to like dance and sing. And it was very distracting. And also the least memorable part of this episode.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so for me, the one thing I like, you know, I actually, and I know it's come back to haunt Naomi, you sent me the meme via text message, but that moment with RuPaul, I love whenever RuPaul gets real and talks to the girls like real people and they actually have a real interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think that advice she gave Manila was such good advice. It actually relates to what you and I just said, you know, where you have to like stick up for yourself or say something foolish, do it, but put yourself out there. And I actually really liked that moment. Now, I have one. I've never done this before. I have a half like, half dislike. Okay?
Okay.
RuPaul's look. I loved that it was, I think, a very blatant white diamond Steven Universe reference.
Okay.
But it looked horrible. It was so funny. We were telling the straight engineer yesterday, before we went on the air, about how beautiful RuPaul is, because he was like, couldn't believe what the man he was seeing was going to be this beautiful woman. And then she came out in the runway, and we were like, he actually really liked it, but we were like, oh my God, she's looked way better. And we were showing him all these pictures during the commercial break of when she's looked better. So it's a half like, I like the reference to Steven Universe, I'm a big Steven Universe fan, but I dislike how shitty it looked on RuPaul. And then finally, and we'll talk about this when we get to it, but I disliked this. I hate whenever RuPaul fake cries. I really do. I think it's the fucking worst.
She wasn't selling it.
Did she sell it to you?
I mean, yes, only because you said I hate when RuPaul fake cries. So that just tells me that this isn't the first time she'd done it.
Oh,
but
yeah,
this was the first time I've seen RuPaul cry. Mm-hmm. So I bought it.
We'll talk more when I get there.
It was awkward. It was a little, you know, but it's cringy. Like, it's cringy when my dad cries too,
yeah.
You know, but mm-hmm. It's real. It's just like, I'm like, oh gosh, like, please stop.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Let's do this before we go to the break, because I don't know if we'll ever get to it. Let's talk about the judges. How did you like Ellen Pompeo? How did you like Frances Bean Cobain?
It was good to see Frances Bean Cobain, because she's not somebody that I think about, yeah. But it's so crazy how much she looks like her dad.
Yeah.
And the whole reference between when RuPaul was holding her as a baby and now she's a full grown woman and this show is in its 11th season. Like, it's just really cool to see that dynamic. Mm-hmm. But as a judge, I didn't really feel like she had a lot to say, and neither did Ellen Pompeo. I kind of wish they would stop having celebrity judges unless they're going to be like actually critical.
Well, there are some that are better than others. And I don't know why it repeats. Like, actually, I really liked from this season. I really thought that Gus and Keenan were really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, they were. But you can tell that they're like huge fans of the show.
Yes. But what's funny is there was a really terrible one named Miles Heiser, I think, last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't say shit. He was horrible. Just sat there like a bump on a log. And it turned out he was actually a huge, huge, huge super fan, but was intimidated or something. You know, I'm surprised they didn't show that picture of Rue holding Frances.
They did.
They did win.
So there was a moment, which is like, it seemed very contrived just to have them show that picture, but they were all putting things in a time capsule.
Oh, I was taking notes during the time capsule. Okay. And then she put that picture in there.
They were putting things in a time capsule, and then Frances Bean pulls out that picture of Rue holding her.
And
he's like, here, you can put this in there. But that it all seemed, and then everybody else put stupid shit in the time capsule, but it all seemed contrived just so they could have that moment where they can explode.
Thank you for coming.
Hey, I held you as a baby once.
Oh, because during those dumb joke moments, I'll take notes or something. Like, I don't care about, Keenan and Gus thumb wrestling. So I'll be working and taking notes during this. So I didn't see that. Oh, well, thank you for doing that. Okay, guys. So with that, we'll be back right after this break.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right. Spring is here. And with spring comes more social events. Now, for a lot of people, that's very exciting because they've been sad because they've been so alone during the winter. This is super exciting. But for a lot of people, I'm somewhere in the middle, this can be very draining, okay? You have to go to a bunch of social events. And it for me, at least, it always seems like when it rains, it pours. So there'll be a weekend where I'm doing nothing. And then there's a weekend where I have to do 10 million things and be in 4 million places all at once. And it's very draining. Have to entertain people and talk to people and be on all the time. Completely drains your social battery. Believe it or not, therapy can give you, and this is what I've learned, some self-awareness about how to set boundaries, how to say yes to things, how to say no to things, and how to keep your mental health safe. I have personally learned how to do this through therapy. It's been very helpful for me. It's how I keep my sanity, even when it seems like there are too many things to go to. If you've been thinking of starting therapy, do me a favor. Give BetterHelp a try. It's totally online. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to park anywhere. You do it in the comfort of your own home. And it's designed, it's even created to be convenient, flexible, and totally suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/dragrace today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dragrace. All right, we're back. After Val's elimination, the girls walk into the workroom to de-drag. Latrice talks about how hard it was to eliminate Valentina. Trinity reveals that she voted for Valentina, and Naomi thanks both queens for allowing her to stay. Trinity makes it clear, though, that she did not spare Naomi because they're friends. Trinity spared Naomi because Trinity wants to win by beating the best. Afterwards, the girls all talk about their scorecards, and Monet seems a little put off by how well Manila and Trinity are doing in the competition. Jamila, your thoughts on this cold open? The girls come back into the workroom.
It just seemed like a lot of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it's clear that nobody has any idea of how they want to play it. But it was also good to see that there was, it was the general consensus that it was Valentina's time to go. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any like, oh, well, actually, I was going to pick, this person. It wasn't that like it was nice to see that they were both, they were all on the same page about sending Valentina home. Mm-hmm. And it was cute to come back and read her, "Oh, I have to pack now,"
yeah,
message on the mirror. So it just, it seemed like everybody was just chill, on the same page before shit goes crazy in next episode.
Well, what's funny, and yeah, let's talk about this right here, is there are some really interesting moments because Manila, you know, it comes up towards the end of that conversation where they go over the scorecard again, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they, we find out that Monet and Trinity have the strongest record. And you can see Monet, the wheels turning in Monet's head. And she's like, huh. And she even says in the confessional, right before they go to the intro, is she says, you know, I'm all about the scorecard, but at a certain point, it's going to be about having to win. And
yes.
you're like, oh, interesting. Interesante.
Yes.
And because now we know. See, again, I people don't know this or are listening at home. We have a show called The Rumor Mill. And so we talk about spoilers. So everyone who knew what spoilers were, they knew what was coming. So I guess I was watching it with a different eye. I wonder if someone who didn't know what was coming would have picked up on that.
But at the same time, you've said this before. There have been times on the Rumor Mill where things are wrong.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. A little birdie told me recently that the rumors about the finals are wrong.
Okay.
So there. So even the people. So this is exclusive here on this show right now. Even the people in the spoiled Drag Race community are going to be gagged because they have it wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
You know, I go, look, it's good for people to be surprised and have the tables.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Especially when it comes to the finals.
Yeah. Because, you know, ultimately, it's probably harder to get the rumors out of the finals because it's just. There's fewer people around, fewer people to spill the tea of what's going mm-hmm. on. All right, the next day, the girls walk into the workroom and notice that all of the pictures of RuPaul on the wall have been exchanged for pictures of Judy Garland. They all stand around the work table and wonder what it could all mean. Next, RuPaul enters the workroom and after a brief history lesson on Judy Garland, delivers this week's maxi challenge. The girls are going to be making over their best Judys. And with that, all of the girls' best friends or romantic partners walk into the room. Naomi has her friend, Ricardo. Monique has her best friend, Danny. Monet welcomes her best friend and assistant, Patty. Latrice greets Tim, and Trinity mauls her boyfriend, Leo, and Manila tearfully welcomes her husband, Michael. This week, in addition to their best Judy into their drag in addition to turning their best Judy into their drag sisters, the girls are asked to choreograph and perform a tribute to Judy Garland. Okay, at this point, Jamila, I mean, there's not really much to talk about. The girls meet their friends, they hear the challenge, but what are your thoughts? Let me rephrase the question this way. What are your thoughts on the concept of the challenge, of people seeing their friends and their lovers again for the first time in a few weeks? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, like I said before, mm-hmm. I think that this, because there are a lot of people who don't know, you know, the lingo, the slang that's in the queer community. Mm-hmm. And so I think that would have been a great opportunity to explain it without the Judy. I just felt like Judy Garland was so random. Mm-hmm. And it was nice that he paid homage to her and we got to see the little, like, you know, explanation of her life and how important she was and like how her death coincided with the Stonewall riots. But I just didn't think that there needed to be like an actual Judy Garland tribute challenge. Mm-hmm. It just seemed a little out of place. So my first reaction when all of their best friends came out was just, I wonder how Latrice Royale is going to pull this off because her friends is not very fortunate.
Yeah.
Looking.
Okay.
And so I just could not see how he would look in drag. So I was really curious about how that was going to happen. And it's funny because I also thought the same thing about Monet's best friend. I was mm-hmm. like, how is this going to work? Mm-hmm. But he does kind of look like a little girl. So mm-hmm. I was like, well, maybe he'll have an easier time. And he did. That ended up being my favorite look was just how good he did when he made over his best friend.
Okay, I want to address a couple of things you said. One, you're right. I mean, it must have been really hard for Latrice. But it's not like Latrice is the most fortunate looking person either.
Yeah, that's true.
She pulled it off. But, you know, the other thing, though, is there have been some in the past. Like, for instance, a couple of years ago, they made over the crew, and actually the most popular one was Wintergreen, and you wouldn't think she'd make a good-looking drag queen.
Well, yeah, but also Miss Wintergreen, a big selling point about her was her personality.
True, true. But then, now, even though this guy is an attractive person, remember the gag of that YouTube influencer when he had a beard and they turned him around and Miss Cracker had done her makeup, and it was like a real woman. And so sometimes miracles can happen. I think it depends on the makeup skills of the person. Now, I do have a little bit of a conspiracy theory, though. I'll tell you this. And my conspiracy theory is because there's when all the Judys came in, I don't remember which one, but the contestant said to their Judy, like, "You have a mustache?" And I was like, yeah, because the producers told them, grow your facial hair out. They all had facial hair. And I think they wanted that moment I just talked about with that YouTube influencer. Mm-hmm. I think they wanted that moment again. So they wanted all of them to show up with facial hair, like mustaches and hadn't shaved. And I think that's what they were going for. And so a little bit of a minor conspiracy theory, but I think that's what was going on. Because some of them, they shouldn't have. One of them, I can't remember who's, I think it was Monique's friend, I swear to God, looked like the gay guy from every 1980s HIV video. Or like would be walking to the front of an anti-AIDS parade in 1984.
Like I don't even remember Monique's friend. What did Monique's friend even look like as a boy?
Curly blonde hair with a mustache?
Yes, okay.
He looked like always the friend in some play about AIDS that's gonna die. You know, that's what he just looked like. All right. Moving on. In the workroom, the girls get reacquainted with their best friends. We learn that Latrice and Tim have been friends for 25 years, and Tim is going to be Latrice's best man. Monet and Patty fool around and kiki with each other. Trinity plays with the wig. Manila and Michael hug a lot, and Naomi teaches Ricardo how to walk in heels. My co-host from last night mentioned that Naomi quoted her own song, where I guess she has a song about how to walk in heels.
Okay.
And she was quoting it when they were doing the walk. But what were your thoughts here during this part of the challenge, Jamila?
I thought it was cute just because you could tell everybody was really happy to have their best friends there. And I mean, especially the people who had their significant others there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Trinity just kept talking about, oh, this is going to be so hard to tuck because he's she just kept like, she couldn't say that enough.
Has she seen Naomi in the workroom?
Right. Right. Like,
Can't
be bigger than Naomi Smalls.
Exactly.
But, it was just interesting to see everybody's dynamic and how they're best friends. And, it was cool to see, cause you could tell that Monique and her friend, I mean, not sorry, Monique, Monet and her friend have a very much a bestie, but also you could tell that he was the assistant because it wasn't just like, oh, okay, like do with me what you will. It was like, I have a say in this. And like, I'm going to tell you when I think that something's not right. And that's such an assistant role.
Yeah. But you know, we talked about this last night. Let's go into this a little bit because they said they were friends first. And I have a lot. I saved this comment for the table visit, but I'll talk about it now. They said they were friends first, and then as Monet got more popular because of season 10, Patty became his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Could you ever be an assistant for your friend?
Yes, absolutely. Really? If my friend is winning, then it's like, it's a no-brainer. It's kind of like when people become celebrities. And this actually happens a lot. When people become celebrities and their sisters or their brothers become their assistant. Mm-hmm. Because it's like you're already family in a sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it only works if you're the person who has no ambitions of being a star yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're like, this is my best friend, they are killing it. Mm-hmm. I want to help them. And then at the same time, you get to go to all over the world and you get to like be in that world of, you know, being on stage and being, you know, in the spotlight, but you're not, you know, you're just assisting excellence. And I would love that role. I think it would be fun because you really don't have to do as much as your friend.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is both of us talked about last night was I actually had a friend who was an assistant for her cousin who's famous. And it wasn't a pleasant experience for her. I think there is a weird, like, there's like, you're my cousin, but yet also my boss. and that can get weird.
Well, but that's the thing, is that, like, you also have to realize that you're being paid.
Yeah.
You know, if you're being paid, anytime money comes into the situation, things have to change from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I am here to do a job. And even if you're bossing me around, I have to kind of roll with it because I'm being paid to be here.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes sense. But the other thing, what I was going to bring up during the table visit, but I'll bring up now, is Monet says to RuPaul during the table visit, you know, like, oh, Bob introduced us and then we became friends. And then ever since you made me famous on season 10, I'm like, wait a minute, by this point, season 10 is just finished when they recorded this. Like, it literally had just finished airing. So really, Monet's been famous for like 2 or 3 months. Like, why would she need an assistant at this stage? Or if she does, like, he's only been your assistant for a little bit. Like,
yes.
So you're questioning,
you're not questioning whether she needs an assistant because she's been famous for so little.
No.
You're questioning how long they've been friends.
I think they've been friends for a while, but I just think maybe, you know, I was actually thinking about this because I wouldn't be surprised if you're a drag queen. I think they wanted amateurs, people who weren't drag queens. Okay.
Yes.
But I wouldn't be surprised if you're a drag queen like Monet, or if you're like a drag queen like Manila. Let's actually take Manila and Trinity, where they had to use their partners because they don't have any non-drag queen friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually, they're probably their real, like, Monet's real best Judy is Bob the drag queen. But
right.
Bob the drag queen already won, and he's a drag queen. They want people who've never done drag. So I think that's the pickle they were in. It's like, well, who the fuck are we going to get for Monet? His assistant? You know, I think that's kind of I'm not doubting that they're friends, but let me put it this way. If Bob introduced them, wouldn't Bob already be closer, or they became so close in that short amount of time?
I've stolen people's friends before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had people introduce me to their friend, and then me and that friend hit it off even more than the friend that introduced us. So, I mean, that is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought if you were questioning why he needed an assistant, like, when season 10 just ended, I feel like sometimes that's the time when you need it the most, because it's kind of like you're shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, very good.
You go from, like, just doing clubs to just having everybody know who you are.
That can be crazy. There was a time when I'm not going to get into why I knew this, but I knew who the season 10 queens were before anybody in the world. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going specifically to Blair St. Clair's Twitter the night before it was going to come out, okay? Because even Reddit let me rephrase. Before Reddit found out about Blair St. Clair, Blair St. Clair was the last person they found out about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And even right before Reddit found out, before it was announced, I would look at her Twitter and she had literally like 75 followers. And I was like, oh my goodness. She doesn't even know what she's in for.
So she's a Hollywood queen?
Blair St. Clair?
Yeah, I mean, like, as far as not from Hollywood, but performs a lot there.
No? Why?
Oh, okay. No, because you said you knew her, you'd seen her.
No, I'd never seen her before. I knew she was going to be on the show.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I knew she was going to be on the show from Inside Tea that I had. So I was just kind of trolling her Twitter, and it was just like 75 followers, and then all of a sudden it blew up. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, at the time, I'm like, and so it must be weird knowing, like, tomorrow this is going to come out and I'm going to be super famous in the gay world. No one knows yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sit on that for months.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because it's like you've already essentially done it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on. All right. During RuPaul's table visits, Monique and Danny have great noses. Also, there's a weird emotional moment between Monique and RuPaul. Leo has a big dick, as we're reminded. Monet is shaving Patty's brows off. Manila wants to teach her husband what it's like to be in drag. Naomi's hands are shaking. And Tim and Latrice sewed Latrice's outfits when Latrice got out of jail. Jamila, your thoughts about RuPaul's visits with all these queens?
I thought the Latrice moment was the most emotional.
Mm.
That, to me, that was the most emotional. Like, I never heard that story before. Mm-hmm. And just seeing, like, two friends who had been friends for almost, you know, most of my life span, like, they really have a history. And to know that, like, at one point Latrice had nothing and this mm-hmm. was the person who helped her out, I felt like that was way more emotional than what RuPaul actually ended up crying about.
Well, okay, I'm going to break it down in little moments. I feel every moment between Tim and Latrice was very real, very organic, very authentic. And here's what I'll even say. I think RuPaul was speaking from an authentic place, felt herself getting emotional and choked up. I think that part was real. And then she was like, oh, this is going to be good TV if I cry. And so then she artificially tried to push it over, but it just sounds really fake. Like, she's done it before. There was an episode where I think it's when Roxy Andrews talks about being left at the bus stop.
Yes.
And she goes, you know, we as gay people, we get to choose our families, right? Which, my favorite quote about that is she says, and we're your family. And I'm like, meanwhile, she doesn't know your name. She's not going to return your calls. I don't know what she's talking about. We're your family. But it's that one moment where she tries to push it into, like, I'm going to get another fucking Emmy, bitch. And this is my Emmy moment. And I was like, come on, RuPaul. Come on. You're not good at this. Just be choked up and be in the moment. What's funny is I looked at it a second time, and you can see Latrice and Tim, when she's choked up, they're not even emotional. They're just staring at her like, what the fuck's wrong with this bitch? Why is she crying? She wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then my favorite thing, too, was I love seeing fat people hug. Because, like, their stomachs come up against each other and their arms are too short to, like, hug. And so they have to, like, lean. It's really strange, but that's what I saw with Latrice and Tim hugging, and I thought it was very special. It's like when me and my co-host Lori Roggenkamp hug. It's it's pretty fantastic. All right.
I'm not saying shit.
do you want to see? Oh,
I know.
I look in the mirror. I know what people see. Now, Jamila.
Yes.
Did you have anything else to say about these table moments?
Yeah, I thought that, like, when you said RuPaul forcing the crying thing a little bit more just to, you know, add some drama, I thought it was interesting with Naomi's table talk where Naomi was just like, oh, you know, I'm just a little nervous. And she was like, why? And she's just like, oh, you know, just a little nervous. I'm going to push you harder on this. Like, what are you really afraid of? What are you really afraid of? And then Naomi had to be like, oh, well, I'm afraid of saying something dumb. It's like, what, you know, it felt like she was like pushing. And then Naomi felt like she had to say something. And then she's like, well, just do it. Just be silly. It just seems way too late to be having this conversation. And yeah, it just seemed late. And I think that also when you're on TV, I think you should be conscious of what you're saying and what you're projecting. I think you should be natural and authentic, but you should always be aware. That's how you avoid scandals and controversy.
I've heard other queens talk about this, and I could see this being with Naomi too, where it's very intimidating when you're in the workroom and RuPaul, this person you looked up to, is standing right there talking to you, and there's a camera on you, and it always hits you where you are. And I think
that you don't think by this time that's like they're over that?
No, because I think they have very, very little interaction with RuPaul, and it's becoming less and less every season. Okay. So I think she still gets nervous. I actually bought into that because she says, I'm very intimidated by you. I think RuPaul is a very intimidating person, especially to these drag queens. Because I don't know if you how much you keep up to with RuPaul in the RuPaul's Drag Race in the off season, but like there was this moment in the off season where Pearl talked about. Did you hear about this on Hey Queen TV when she said that during season 7 she was trying to explain why she was so shitty on season 7, and she said early on she had a moment with RuPaul where they had to change the battery on the camera, and she told Ru, you know, I just want you to know I look up to you and I've always looked up to you and what you mean for the community. And Ru told her, shut her up and said, what you say doesn't matter unless these cameras are on. And that really gave her a negative sort of vibe from RuPaul. But you hear like very intimidating stories from RuPaul and how she doesn't really interact with the queens when the cameras aren't rolling.
Well, I mean, I guess like RuPaul, for me at least, especially someone who started watching Drag Race really late, RuPaul as a historical, like legendary figure aside, I think if you just look at the show, the queens, the contestants are always bigger than the judges to me. You know, like just based on the show, the queens are way bigger and way more like iconic to me than RuPaul is. Even if you look at the funniest moments of RuPaul's Drag Race, if you look at the funniest like just catchphrases. Even this episode, RuPaul was like, get those nuts away from my face. Like, to me, the queens have just become bigger than the judges. And that's completely different than a show like, you know, American Idol or The Voice, where it's like the contestants are just like, whatever. That's just, they're just an excuse to have a show. And it's all about the judges, you know? So that's why I just, I see RuPaul and I'm just like, oh, it's, you know, oh, it's the, she's the Ryan Seacrest of the show.
Well, I think maybe just, with someone with Bianca who's older, or maybe the older queens who have success, maybe, but Naomi's still a baby. I think she's only, what, 25?
Yeah.
She's really young still, so. All right. It's elimination day. And oh, you know, I want to talk about one more thing. Monique actually had a very similar moment with RuPaul where Monique got to have a tender moment with RuPaul. And I think that was really nice to see, you know, sharing. Here's what my experience has been like, and RuPaul interacting with her in a very deep, emotional way. And also talking about how Monique had a shitty look on her face when they're doing the judging, which I thought was kind of fun, but yet brought out a real moment. Okay, it's elimination day, and Latrice explains to Tim the drama of the competition. Monet shaves Patty's brows. Manila throws shade at Latrice about her facial hair. Manila is turned on by her husband in drag. Tim is a beast. Trinity tucks her boyfriend the way she tucked Rizzo on the makeover episode. Jamila, your thoughts on elimination day? No real big mirror moments, but it was fun nonetheless to see them getting into drag, seeing the results. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I can't think of anything I'd ever shave my eyebrows for. But Patty with the red hair looked the least crazy because, you know, being a redhead, her eyebrows were already kind of blonde, kind of, you know, like camouflaged with her face a little bit. So that was the least dramatic transition. I thought it was really cute seeing Manila's husband, how like happy he looked when he was makeup. I thought that was really cool. And you know, because like in that part of the workroom you hadn't really seen everybody put together yet, and we didn't know what people were going to do, because sometimes when they're in their workroom they talk through their plan. They're like, okay, well, I think we're going to give them this, or I think we're going to go for like a this look. Nobody was really saying anything about what they were going to do, so at this point I was still kind of like, okay, I'm seeing some faces, but I don't really know what people are going to actually put together.
Yeah, they didn't show any reveals or anything.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, I feel like in a normal episode, without that stupid Judy Garland challenge, you would have had Naomi saying, I mean, she did say, like, I think I'm going to do a little boy drag, but usually she would have probably been like, I'm thinking I'm going to do some kind of ode to Sunny and Cher. You know, like, she would have been a little bit more, like, transparent about what she was going to do, and so with the other queens, but I think there just wasn't enough time in the show for that.
No, you're right. And but I wish they would have focused more on that. Then I feel we got a lot of the same thing about, you know, Leo's big dick and showing it was a long time of watching people tucking
at this point. Like, I need to see Leo's dick, because I just
honestly I find Leo very awkward, and so I think his dick would be very awkward.
Like, awkward how? Like, what do you think it looked like?
I bet you, here's my real take. This is just looking at Leo, right? And I could see myself being sort of like a penis whisperer. He seems like someone who has a long dick, but like a really thin shaft with an oversized head.
Yes. I know the type.
Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking. And like, doesn't shave his bush.
Why do you think he doesn't shave his bush?
He looks like someone who doesn't shave his bush.
Okay.
And I could see Trinity being into length. I don't see him as a girthy dick.
Right. Where it's just like you like the fear of God is in you. Yeah. Where you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm going to take this. It's just kind of like, oh, this is really, really, really nice and long. So, yeah.
Are you a size queen? I've known girlfriends who are size queens. You know, to a lot of girls, like, it doesn't matter. But are you a size queen?
No, I would say that it really depends on the person, because I have been with people who were super hung but didn't know what they were doing. And so it's just kind of like, this is crazy. Like, I'm not enjoying this at all. And then I've been with people who are like on the smaller side, but just really, really good in bed, and like will find a way to hit walls that you didn't even know that they could hit. So, it doesn't matter to me. It really depends on the person.
Well, yeah, but you know, I've always.
But I can't imagine Naomi Smalls being bad.
No, But as you famously wrote in the workroom last week, you want Naomi to rearrange your guts.
Rearrange my guts.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. And I know that's never going to happen, but a girl can dream.
You can dream. Speaking of, over on Patreon, our supporters received an extra long version of last week's episode. Listen to alternative views on the competition from people of color called Reclaiming Our Time, Jamila. Got the latest rumors, tea, and speculation. Heard analysis on the first batch of the new Season 11 Queens. Got special flair for our new Drag Race recap subreddit. Received an advanced notice about the YouTube page. YouTube page. You got to subscribe, okay? And you'll get notifications when we go live. YouTube.com/C/Drag Race Recap. Plug for that. No, it doesn't cut. You don't have to be a Patreon, doesn't anything. You can go right. In fact, you can go right now for free, Jamila, and watch the hour and 40 minute thing that we did on YouTube yesterday. It's a whole thing.
I'm going to.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. I'm going to, but that Patreon thing seems like a really good deal.
Thank you, Jamila. Took a poll to influence the direction of the show. Received brand new content every day of the week in their podcast week app. Next week, co-host Evan Ayers and I will be joined by our own personal best Judies for the rumor mill. And Lori Roggenkamp and I will launch our recap of Drag Race Thailand. By the way, I'm going to show it to you after the show, Jamila. We also got the artwork for our forthcoming show. It'll be released this week, actually, for Dragula. Have you ever heard of Dragula?
I have not. Oh, actually, you know what? No, I heard you talking about it. It's like this B-level Drag Race show that it comes on what channel?
It's on Amazon Prime right now, but it comes on like a Canadian channel. You can get on. It started on YouTube, then Out TV in Canada got it, and now you can watch all the seasons on Amazon Prime. It's basically like an alternative scary version of drag.
Okay.
They don't want to be compared to Sharon Needles, but...
Sharon Needles could host it, essentially.
Oh, Sharon Needles could totally host it. But it's hosted by the Boulay brothers, who, they're fierce. They're fierce. And so, yeah. Okay, all this and more can be yours for only $3 a month. To join, visit patreon.com/dragracerecap. Yes, that's right. That's patreon.com/dragracerecap. Join at the $3 level. The all-you-can-eat level, and that'll all be yours. Okay, Jamila, we're going to take a break right here, and we will be back to talk about Judy Garland and the looks. Okay, we're back. Let's talk about that Judy Garland number, Jamila. What was your hot take there?
Hated it. Yeah. It was just terrible. It was just a waste of my time. And it wasn't even like a big group challenge where they all had to hold their own and mm-hmm. get the judges to look at them while everyone's on stage. It was just them and their rhythmless best friends and all wearing the same thing. I think I said this before, like if they had each gotten to choose a different Judy Garland look, mm-hmm. that could have made for something interesting. Mm-hmm. But the song was terrible. It was really awkward to watch.
Yeah.
They were all wearing the same thing, so it was boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even really remember it all that well because it wasn't memorable. Like, it's not going to be something that anybody's going to talk about in future seasons.
No. You know, what's funny, speaking of Judy Garland, they did a Wizard of Oz challenge and they did like, a very similar thing for the Judy Garland show, but they had some weird Wizard of Oz number that was pointless. It was so stupid. And you're like, why did they even do this? It was so dumb. This was so awful. It was pointless. I'll be honest with you. I was just working on the script when it happened last night. Like, I was just like, oh, this is dumb. And I rewatched it again today to see if I missed anything. I didn't miss anything. It was horrible. I don't know why they do these horrible numbers. Any other thoughts on it, Jamila?
No.
Okay, so let's talk about the looks. Do you have any big thoughts? I'm going to go through them one by one. Do you remember them? Do you want me to send you a link where you can look at them?
Yeah, that works.
Send you a link where you can look at them?
Yes.
How are we going to do that here? Copy link address. I'm going to send it to you in Google Hangouts.
Yes. I'm ready.
Oh, wait. I stupidly closed that Google Hangouts window.
I mean, I was able to call the top two before the judges did.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes.
Well, here we go. I'm going to send it to you right now. Here we go. I'm going to send it to you right. In fact, you know, I'm going to stop the music. Tell me when you have it open.
Mm-hmm. I have it open.
Yeah, the looks open already?
Oh, no, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to edit this out. And then we'll start all over.
I see the bubbles, the typing bubbles. Okay, bam.
Okay, tell me, it's going to be like, it's going to take you to a Twitter page where you can just look at the actual video of the looks. And so tell me when you're ready to go.
Okay. Da, 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 da. It's loading. Gotcha. Okay, I am ready.
Okay, let's do it right here. Okay. All right, Jimmy, let's talk about the looks. All right, the first up one is we had a roll.
Sorry, I have to mute it.
That's 100% me. All right. Yeah. All right. The first one up we have is Latrice Royale and Alexis Knight. Your thoughts?
It's so, you see how wooden, how wooden she is.
Yeah.
It's so crazy because it's like she has these skinny ass legs and just it's huge up top. And I mean, this is the point where you're like, you have to be uncomfortable for a little bit. So like put a shaper on her, like, you know, like pat her butt a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's just really awkward. But and then why is she wearing Latrice Royale is so weird. Why is her friend wearing white tights?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
why isn't she wearing like flesh colored tights? It's the same thing. It's the same criticism I had when Latrice Royale wore that like flesh colored bodysuit with cutouts, but it wasn't her skin tone. So she just looked crazy. I just don't understand her taste sometimes.
Or why she couldn't have given, because here's the deal. They don't really look like family members, not just the skin color, but like there's no, I think Monique is sort of, believe it or not, even though the Cher one is great, Monique's outfit is actually the standard I'm going to hold them to, where they work together.
Mm-hmm.
This one, they both have big blonde hair?
Yeah, and she's just, the church tights are killing me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, they look so terrible. And I mean, you know, honestly, they just really look like two old queens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, two old 80s queens.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. They're going to do a really shitty karaoke cover of It's Raining Men.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I'm going to give it a boot. What about you?
A boot.
All right, here we go. Next up is Monique Hart and Shanita Hart. Your thoughts, Jamila?
I give it a two. I thought it was so cute. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very, like she said, avant-garde. I love the little winky thing. They didn't have to do it 20 times. I got it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really cute. And it looked like the little lips are like throwing up legs.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, and you know what? And I just realized that it's pink in the middle. They're like, both of their inner legs are pink because it's like supposed to resemble like a tongue, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought it was really playful, really fun, and it's a great way to look like family, to look related when you're of two different races.
Exactly, because then you're focused on the costume, not necessarily the skin color. Also, it reminds me a lot of, you know, we were just talking about the Boulay brothers and Dragula. Whenever you see them, their outfits complement each other like this. So when they stand together, it forms like a complete whole. So that's something you often see with the Boulay brothers. Okay, so we both give it a toot. Next up, we have Manila Luzon and Aya Wife Luzon. Go ahead, Jamila. What do you think?
Hold on. Let me skip to them. I'm still on Monique. Okay, so I think Frances Bean Cobain said it best when she said it looked like a Grecian, a plain white Grecian dress, and they just stuck these little accessories on them, these little crown accessories. I think the concept is great, but I think the execution was really boring. And I definitely think that she deserved to be on the bottom for this.
Mm-hmm.
And just really boring. Just seemed like something that like you would get at the Halloween store.
Yeah, when I watched it last night on YouTube, I was giving it all this praise. But when I watched it, because when I was watching it in the studio, it was on a TV far away, and I was kind of half watching it and taking notes, and I liked it more then. When I watched it on HD, in HD today, on a TV that was closer to me, I was like, oh, this looked kind of, I don't know if cheap's the right word, but like not as the same kind of quality we've been expecting from Manila.
Yeah, and the thing is that Manila's whole thing is why we love her so much is because she's over the top.
Yeah.
She does like almost too much sometimes, but it's like she pushes it there.
Mm-hmm.
And with this, it was like, it was so stark white. There was just so much, it was just white robes that she really could have had taken that concept of like Queen of Hearts and Queen of Clubs, Queen of Diamonds and Queen of Clubs, and really did a lot with it, and she just didn't.
Yeah. I completely 100% agree with you. The one thing I won't agree with the judges, though, is when they said that they didn't look like family. I actually think makeup-wise, she did a good job making them look related. So I don't know if I necessarily agreed totally with that. Because even if the outfit looked cheap, it worked together.
It could have been sisters. It was the same theme.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so you give it a boot or a toot?
I give it, what's in between a boot and a toot?
I forget what it's called between a boot and a toot.
A boot?
There is a word for it. I can't remember what it is. We'll say a bamoot.
A bloot.
Tell us in the chat room when they hear it in 15 seconds.
It's a bloot for me.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Next up, we have Naomi Smalls and Extra Smalls. Jameela.
Oh my God.
Wait, Jameela, you're gone. What happened?
Sorry, right. I dropped my mic.
Yeah,
I dropped my mic because it was so stunning.
Yeah,
I just couldn't believe it. I thought when Naomi first came out, I was just like, oh no, this is so bad. Two shares?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was two shares, but her friend's share, Extra Smalls, looked amazing.
Yeah.
And then Naomi just had this bad wig on. And I was just like, what is this? And then just this pantsuit. But the second she took it off, I was like, okay, what's happening? What's happening? And then she stuck on the mustache. And I was like, yes! Like, she just pulled it out. And so I loved it. I love the finished product. But at the same time, I think I heard a spoiler that Naomi Smalls was making over a friend and that their end look was going to be a Sunny and Cher look. And I remember being so confused because I was like, wait a minute. I thought this was a Judy Garland episode. So that was a little weird to make a reference to another celebrity in another celebrity themed episode, you know? I don't know what Judy Garland she could have done, but yeah, I thought that was a little weird, but I thought the look was great. And I'm going to give it a toot.
Oh, yeah, it's a big toot. I was a big fan. And also, we learned the mustache borrowed from Manila Luzon.
Yes.
They say that. We'll talk about that during the deliberations, but that reminds me a lot of the All-Stars 2 shirt, Roxy's shirt.
Yes.
Remember that.
Yeah.
Okay, they're still dancing on the stage. Okay, coming up next, we have... All right, leave the stage, Cher and Naomi. Okay, here we go. All right, up next we have Trinity the Tuck and Indigo the Tuck. Your thoughts here, Jameela?
I thought that they looked really together. Like, they looked... I'm not a huge fan of the look, but what I like about Trinity is that you know whatever she's going to give you is not going to be messy. It's going to be clean. It's going to be together. It's going to be polished. And so they were probably... Because even though I liked Naomi's look a lot, I feel like Monet and Trinity's look were the most polished.
Okay.
Yeah, I give it a toot. I give it a toot more because of the effort that I know was put into it and less about the look.
Okay, I understand the logic there. I give it a boot. I think Leo's very awkward. She should have focused more on teaching him how to walk in heels and walk and not looking awkward than the tuck and talking about his big dick. But I also wasn't a big fan of the look. It just seemed like... crazy Southern woman who's racist at Walmart.
Well, you know how how Alyssa Edwards is always talking about, like, I'm going to give you rich white woman, and like that's what I feel like this is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it is opulence, not my kind of opulence, but it's clean and it looks good. I mean, I think they look very together, and you definitely can tell they're related. There's definitely a relation between the two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next up we have Monet Exchange and Patty Cash.
Oh, these bitches. They look so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, looked really good. And the best thing about it is that, like, there is a real transformation for Patty Cash. Because
mm-hmm.
she looks nothing like she did as a boy. And I thought that maybe Monet would go the easy way out and choose a red wig. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I thought that she would try to match her, mm-hmm. where she was just like, no, like, I'm going to turn you out. Yeah. And I think that this is, like, at some point, I think it might have been, like, 2 episodes ago. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a real turning point for Monet and fashion where I went from being like, oh, okay, she stepped up her game. Like, she's actually, like, trying to mm-hmm. being like, oh, she's killing it. And this outfit, that cat suit, she looked really good. I want to borrow it.
Oh, wow, you do?
Yeah, I loved it.
But wait, but why don't you have a problem with her white tights?
Oh, I do.
Oh, okay.
But they match her face. So,
yeah, you're right.
I don't know. She just looks like a really pale person versus someone who's wearing white tights. Like, doesn't it kind of, like, if you look at her face, doesn't it kind of look like her skin?
It does. No, it looks almost exactly like her skin, which is almost kind of creepy because it's so white.
White, yeah. But at the same time, it's kind of giving me Dita Von Teese a little bit. Because when you look at Dita, you're just kind of like, wow, this is a really pale chick. Mm-hmm. So, it didn't bother me as much.
All right, well, there you go. That's the looks. All right, on the main stage. The comments were generally positive, except for Manila, who the girls didn't like because they compared Manila to previous Manila looks. The judges didn't like because they compared Manila to previous Manila looks. Latrice and her partner weren't spared either. And what seems like rigor mortis, the two best Judys, Manila and Latrice, are in the bottom two and have to plead their cases to the top two queens, who are Monet Exchange and Naomi Smalls. Later, when their best Judys come into the room, Michael and Tim cry that they let their friends down, and Latrice finds herself comforting everyone. Back on the main stage, Monet and Naomi go head-to-head in a lip-sync battle for their legacies. The song, Come Rain or Come Shine, by Judy Garland. Naomi Smalls finally was named the winner of a challenge, and in the end, in one of the most controversial moments of the season, which I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time talking about, Naomi Smalls eliminated Manila Luzon from the competition. Jamila, give us your final thoughts on the season. Break everything down from the main stage on to the end.
Well, can I just say one thing?
Yeah, you can say a lot of things.
You're really good at writing copy.
Thank you.
Like, really good.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm so flattered.
Yeah.
It's a day I need this kind of flattery. Thank you. I do have a job. It's working for with the wonderful people here on Patreon. who I have to say, they feel so close to me. They have no problem telling me exactly how they feel about every single aspect of the show.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the final moments. First of all, the lip sync. I was wondering why Monet wasn't doing more. Like, yes the final gag with mm-hmm. the umbrella was, like, beautiful, and it looked great with her cat suit. Mm-hmm. But you need to match Naomi's energy, because
there's a conspiracy theory that she threw it. Because she knew that they were both. Because, okay, so this is not a spoiler because it's out there in the public. But in the preview for next week, someone has taken a screenshot from the preview. Okay, and it shows the lipstick on the table, mm-hmm. and that Monet also chose Manila. So,
yeah, and right.
And people who are mad about spoilers, sorry, that it's from the first 1 minute of the show next week, and it's out there. It's out there in the public. It's not like something hasn't been released.
But, you know, I feel like, well, I know that this didn't happen. There's no way that this could have happened. But I feel like in my imagination, if Monet and Naomi got together and was like, girl, I pick Manila, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, which one of us is going to send her home?
Yeah.
I feel like Naomi would have been like, girl, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like she was lip syncing, like she had no problem. Like it was everything. Mm-hmm. And you know that. If you win, you're going to have to be the one to send someone home. Yeah. But I think Naomi at this point just doesn't care. She just wants to shine.
Yeah.
And well, she hadn't had that shine chance. She did.
Yeah. She needed to do it to shine because she's been lost in the show. And I think she realizes that, you know, we talked about this in the show last night. I'll say it again. Naomi, the spirit she brought to the lip sync was much more in line with Judy Garland than just standing there, you know, being very theater and like finding your light. Like, Judy Garland was very frenetic and energetic, yes. and all over the place.
It was more Judy. It was, to me, I felt like the lip sync was a bigger tribute to Judy Garland than the challenge was.
Yes. Yes. I don't know why they, because it's from a legendary Judy Garland album. It's when she was live at Carnegie Hall, which, by the way, is an incredible album. Because, mm-hmm. again, Judy Garland, if you've never heard it, Jamila, you should at least listen once.
Oh, I have. It's actually probably the one Judy Garland album that I have heard.
It's the one Judy Garland album everyone should hear, you know, but you don't think you need anything else. But she talks to the audience. She's very real. She has a real connection with the audience, and she messes up words, and she just keeps going. But she had that kind of energy, and Naomi totally captured it. And you're, I don't know why they picked that particular song, because there's better numbers from that album to pick, but mm-hmm. I don't know. That was a strange choice, but, and the cuts were really weird. And what's funny is they have on the album, I'm actually looking at it right now, there are some very short songs. She has some songs. There's one here that's only a minute and 59 seconds, and it's a fast number. Like they could have picked an up-tempo 1 minute, 59 second one that they, and probably half of that's applause. You know?
Yeah.
So, right. I don't know. It was a weird choice for the song. But any other thoughts on the lip sync? Do you buy into that Monet threw it?
I mean, it would make sense just because I've seen Monet give better performances where Monet is all over the stage. And usually in a lip sync, it's two people vying for the attention. And I felt like it wasn't that. Like if you had to just judge it straight on lip syncing, Monet did a really good job, but she didn't look like somebody who was trying to win it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Now let me ask you this. Do you think there was any kind of rigor mortis to put the two best friends in the show in the bottom on the best Judy episode? But here's the weird thing. Wouldn't you say that who else would you put in the bottom? They really were the two worst looks.
They really were the two worst looks. I think it just kind of happened that way. Because, I mean, you know, like I'm always down to shout conspiracy in the middle of a room. But I just don't think they really were the worst looks of the night. I also just have to mention that Naomi looked stunning in that green dress. She just looked like money. Yeah. I loved it.
She looked fantastic. I was a big fan as well. Okay, so let's get to it. So they name Latrice and Manila as the bottom two. Okay, and now Monet and Naomi have to talk to the girls backstage, and they have to plead. And Manila and Latrice have to plead their cases. There was speculation they talked about on the rumor mill that Manila, because we knew she was going to go home, that Manila was going to like throw the towel in and tell them to vote her out, but that didn't happen. What were your thoughts on this deliberation moment? Because now we're going to a very big moment in the season, you know?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on that deliberation before they do the elimination?
I just remember at one point, Manila was talking to Naomi, and she said something to the effect of, you know, even if this is my last day on Drag Race and I never come back again, I have a great life outside of here and I have an amazing husband and I have a, and I was like, that's not what you say when you're trying to stay, girl. Like, what are you doing? You're basically saying like, if you send me home, I'm going to be okay, which is like, that's true. I mean, like, that's what I've been saying for the longest time. Like but I say that when fans get upset, you know, when fans are like, oh my gosh, like you kicked off my favorite person. I'm like, well, it's not like they're being sent out to pasture to get shot. Yeah. Like they're going to be fine outside of the show. But if you're trying to convince someone to let you stay, that's just not what you say. So I thought that was a little weird, and she just seemed like the kind of person who was like, you know, I know this decision is hard for you. So just, you know, don't worry about me. And that's just, it was a little weird.
Now,
considering that I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. I want to get to something that Monet says in one of the confessionals, and she's actually talking about Latrice here, but she says, she makes this comparison to a cooking competition, and don't talk about a dish you cooked a month ago. I want to know what you cooked today. You know, that's what you're judged on. But that's the thing, though, and that's what frustrates me. Now, before I make an argument against Monet, is I'm against the scorecard version of voting people out anyway, because you land up in these predicaments. Because if you remember the top of the show, Manila and Latrice, I'm sorry, Manila and Trinity, you found out they're way ahead of everybody else. So if you do a scorecard version of the show, well, then everybody should just go home because there's no way at this stage, there's only two episodes left after today, that anyone's going to catch up to these girls.
But at the same time, if you don't do a scorecard of the show, if Trinity lands in the bottom on episode 3, you can just get her out of there.
Yeah.
You know, which just seems, which I mean, I guess is like all fair in love and war, but that I don't think that would make for an interesting show. I like that it's kind of like now it's like, you know, it's not like we're watching a show with like all the bottom queens and the top queens at the top. Everybody for the most part is a top queen. And so I feel like that's more interesting. So I feel like I think at a certain point I think you should do the scorecard up to a certain point, and then you got to say, okay, this is episode 7. We're throwing that out.
Okay. I would be fine with that. I'd be fine with that. Or what if they did I don't know.
And I mean, honestly, I think that's essentially what Naomi did, you know, like now she's like, okay, girls, I know we were doing it that way, but now that I got the girl, and I feel like, honestly, I feel like Manila gave her permission to do it because that was Manila's argument the entire time when she thought about, possibly sending, who was it? Was it Trinity or Valentina? Manila was like going to send home. It was Valentina.
Mm-hmm. And Trinity, Trinity talked her out of it.
Right. And Trinity talked her out of it. Right. So like that was Trinity was down to play that game, or Manila was down to play that game from the beginning anyway. Yeah. And so I felt like Naomi just kind of ripped the bandage off and said, all right, like no rules from here on out.
Yeah. But now let me ask you, I'm going to take a little nitpicky moment. There's that part where we learn that Naomi got the mustache from Manila. Now in All Stars 2, there was a hit big, you know, how blah, 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 whatever that word is. I can't talk right now. There was a big hubbub because Alaska saved Roxy because Roxy lent her a shirt. Okay. And do you think that Naomi, I'm not saying yes or no here, but do you think that Naomi owed Manila anything because Manila helped her with the mustache?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I think that she still had to sell it. She still had to, because a mustache doesn't make Sunny and Cher. I mean, I know you need the mustache to be Sunny and Cher, but it's still, there's a lot more elements to why she won. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of like I've always been told that like when you help someone, you don't do it with any expectations.
Yeah.
Even when you let people borrow money, like, you know, you should only give enough money that you don't expect back, you know? And I feel like, yeah, she helped her out, but that doesn't mean she should expect to be saved. And also, Latrice was the one who spared her in the last episode. And I feel like I have more loyalty to someone who didn't cut me from the competition than I have loyalty to someone who let me borrow, you know, facial hair.
Yeah, so that was my next question. My next question was, did Naomi owe anything to Latrice for not eliminating her the previous week?
I mean, I don't think she owed it to her, but I do think it counts for something, you know, because Valentina versus Naomi is a really tight race.
Yeah.
That's a really tight race. And she really could have went either way. Mm-hmm. But she, and even, you know, when Latrice was talking to her, she said, she was like, I brought you back because I feel like you still had shit to do. Mm-hmm. And look at you. Like, look, you won, you know? And if she had a cut her, she would have gone home with no wins. Mm-hmm. So because she kept her, she at least has a win. She got to do that amazing lip sync. I feel like she doesn't owe her for keeping her on the show, but a little bit of you has to feel like you probably do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good point. I agree. It's a tricky thing. And that's why, you know, when you watch the YouTube show, if you go there, like I kind of gloss over the elimination because I kind of feel Naomi did what she had to do. Like, look, either way, she's she's in a fucked up position. Okay. Yeah. It's damned if you do.
But here's the thing, though, is that like, because I understand. I mean, I love Naomi Smalls, and I don't fault her for what she did. Don't fault her at all. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't think it wouldn't have been a big deal to send Latrice home. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if she had sent Latrice home, that would have made sense too. You know, Latrice has the worst record. Mm-hmm. She was brought back. That was definitely something that didn't have to happen, but it mm-hmm. did. Going home a second time is just kind of like, you know, you're used to it at this point. And yeah. if she was judging on a scorecard, then sending Latrice home would have made sense. So mm-hmm. what do you think about that? Like, what do you think would have been the outcome had she sent Latrice home?
I think it's so funny, and I was going to frame the question at you, and so I'm going to answer it, and then I'm going to ask you a question, I think it would have obviously been less damage than, she would have gotten some hate, but it would have been less than she got from Manila, but by doing, but Naomi essentially did was slay a giant, and she made the path easier for her to win the crown.
Right.
Which also makes it easier for other people to win the crown. But if Naomi thinks she's genuinely the best, she thinks, I just got rid of my biggest competition. And so my question to you is this, and I hope it doesn't sound flip. It's a genuine question, though. Do you think that, because, you know, Naomi is an African-American drag queen. Latrice mm-hmm. is a black drag queen. Monet and Monique. Do you think, and I'm not saying it's like a whole like cabal that they got together, but do you think there'd be blowback in the black drag queen community if she eliminated like this beloved titan of black drag queens, Latrice Royale? Or would they just be like, man, whatever, it's a competition?
No, I think they would have been like, no, whatever, it's a competition. And I say this, I mean, not to be political, but I feel like what happened to Manila is something that black women are used to. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just used to it. Like, we're just used to being cut mm-hmm. and the response being, well, you know, it was just a business decision, mm-hmm. you know? And that's why I thought it was so funny, because I was just like, you know, when I, you know, cause I knew the spoiler, I knew mm-hmm. it was going to happen
yeah.
and I was okay with what was going to happen. But my biggest thing was like, the blowback is going to be crazy. Mm-hmm. And how is Naomi going to handle it? You know, mm-hmm. cause even, you know, when people were talking about sending Latrice home, they were like, oh, she's a beloved queen, you're going to get so much hate. And that actually made people nervous. So I was like, how is she going to handle it? And then to see in the next episode, she was just like, life's not fair, is it? And I was like, yes. Like, you know, like, she's just like, hey, listen, I'm here to play a game. And also, just like looking on Twitter, someone had posted screenshots of the Meet the Queens All-Stars before the show even started, mm-hmm. where they're interviewing Naomi Smalls, and she says, people are not going to see what's coming. I am here to win no matter what. Mm-hmm. And she was like, does that make me a villain? Am I going to be a villain on this season? And then she kind of laughs. And so it's a little foreshadowing, mm-hmm. but it's just really her saying, listen, I want to win. I feel like it's not like I'm a terrible queen and I'm just like, you know, taking out that, like, I'm a fierce competitor too, but this person is standing in my way of me getting what I want. And mm-hmm. I honestly, I think that's a good lesson to learn about life, mm-hmm. you know, like, don't be afraid to make decisions. Like, if you feel like you are, you know, a competitive person and it's a competition, you know, don't do people dirty, but at the same time, like, don't be afraid to put yourself first.
No, I completely agree. In fact, what you were talking about, what women of color see all the time, is I really felt that last season when Shangela wasn't in the top two and the jury voted for Kennedy and Trixie.
Yes.
And that look on Shangela's face was, you could tell it was not the first time she's felt that.
Yes. Yeah.
It was not the first time she knew she was the best and she didn't make it to the top for whatever reason, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, no, it's, and you're right. And at the end of the day, it's like, you have to win the competition. You have to make the choice that's right for you. And also, Naomi's young enough and social media savvy enough to know, like, okay, it's going to be shitty for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're just going to move on to some other tirade. Like, right. Look, Alaska had, in fact, Alaska took it, Alaska's sort of the model. Alaska took it and made it a part of who she was. When they started sending her snake emojis, she turned that into, like, a thing that she just worked with.
Right, her signature emoji.
Yeah, and it became her signature emoji. All right, are there any final thoughts on the episode, Jamila? Have you gotten everything you wanted to say about the episode out?
I think so. I'm just really excited for next episode. And I'm really excited to listen to your spoiler show because I can't imagine who's going to be in the bottom next week.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that on the Rumor Mill. And also, like I said, we're going to have Evan's going to have his best Judy Jorge on. Jorge's going to come back. And then my best Judy, Sweet Michael, will be on the show with us. So it's going to be us with our best Judys. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the tea I found out about the top two. And it's all going to be discussed on the Rumor Mill. Again, available on Patreon. Patreon.com/Drag Race Recap. And by the way, don't forget to go. You should. Don't. Even though. Look, here's the deal with this YouTube show. It was the first time we ever did a YouTube show. There were technical difficulties at the studio, something about their internet. And you're going to get to see my face. It's really, I should never have someone as good looking as Jake Dupree on the show because he's so attractive. And then I look like, I'm not even joking, like if you had a Jabba the Hutt candle and half melted it, that's what I look like on the show. And it's awful. So anyway, well, so go there. YouTube.com/C/DragRaceRecap. You can see the whole recap we did immediately afterwards. And again, Jake and Irene was coming. You would think that they just eliminated Layla McQueen. We just didn't even talk about Manila going home and people were upset. All right. Well, that concludes this week's episode of RuPaul's Drag Race Recap. Be sure to join us next week and every week as we continue to discuss, dissect, and deconstruct each brand new episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. So for Jamila Zerah, for Jamila, you can find her at Jamila Zerah. That's JamilaZaraha over on Instagram.
That's right.
And at her website, hihowareyou.com. That's H-I-G-H for the high. HIGHHOWAREYOU.com. So, for Jamila Zerah and myself, sashay away. Want to share your thoughts about Drag Race? Email us at dragracerecap@gmail.com. The outro music was written by Lucian Piani and arranged and performed by Alex Lefebvre. You can find Alex Lefebvre on Instagram at Alex Lefebvre Music. That's AlexLefevremusic. For up-to-the-minute news about the show, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragracerecap and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Drag Race Recap. You can also support the show at patreon.com/dragracerecap. Finally, to find all of our old episodes, visit our website at dragracerecap.com.